Well, great to have some blues to start our post-Easter show of Mental Health Radio Take It From Us. That was theme music from Joe Cocker called Respect Yourself. And we hope that everyone had a decent sort of Easter. I experienced a little bit of cabin fever last night. Needed to make a call to just communicate with the outside world. Anyway, I'm host Sheldon Brown, and we've got technician here, Declan Curran, and we're funded by Framework. Today on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, we talk about sleep. What's its connection with mental health? What comes first, bad sleep or bad mental health? It's a catch-22, a chicken and egg sort of dilemma. Can be as bad as a sort of a vicious circle. In other words, does our mental health deteriorate leading to poor sleep, or does poor sleep cause us mental health issues? Is your mental health leading to sleepless nights and yawn-filled days? The data paints a picture that as many as 50 to 80%, that's 50 to 80% of people living with typical psychiatric illnesses also report chronic sleep problems. I'll just say that again, that 50 to 80% of people living with typical psychiatric illnesses also report chronic sleep problems. And that's compared to less than 20% of the general population. So here's counselling psychologist Vicky Baird to shed light on the connection between sleep and our mental health. Welcome, Vicky. I hope you had a nice Easter. We're just on the right microphone there. So, yeah, you had a good Easter?
Great, yes, I did, thanks. I was in the Coromandel with my girlfriends for a night, and that was lovely.
Oh, well, a little bit of wine and pasta.
Yes, it was so nice.
That's right. So I guess this is a big issue, this issue of sleep, isn't it? I mean, what is the power of sleep?
Okay, so the power of sleep is twofold, Sheldon. Basically, sleep helps to restore and rejuvenate not just our physical body, but also our mind. So, for instance, the recommended number of hours sleep a night an adult should have is between 7 and 9 hours a night. And what happens when we are sleeping is that our body is being able to balance and repair cells. It also clears out the brain, clears out chemicals, balances hormones, helps to balance our metabolism. And also obviously gives us the rest that we need. And so physically, it's essential for rejuvenation, is particularly in ourselves, but also mentally. It's an important time when we're able to mentally process and clear out, if you like, what's been going on throughout the day.
I mean, sometimes those mental issues, those problems that we've got, those emotional issues are the very things that are likely to keep us awake.
Yes, that's certainly true, and we will be discussing, I guess, quite in depth about the link between mental health and sleep.
Yeah, a bit later on in the program. Yeah. So are there different types of sleep, you know, in terms of the quality?
Yep, so the type of sleep that we have is very important, and it might be useful just to explain briefly. There's four main stages of sleep. And the four stages tend to go around in 90-minute cycles. So stage one of sleep lasts for the first 5 or 10 minutes, and that's a stage when we're not fully asleep and we're not fully awake. We're in this kind of light, almost daydreaming state. We're kind of drifting off. Stage two is when we're going a bit more into... We're heading towards a deeper sleep, and that's when we start to disengage from our surroundings. So we start to, like, not be concerned with the sounds or movements around us. Our breathing and our heart rate begin to slow down, become more regular, and our body temperature drops. And then stage three, and now stage three and stage four are really the important stages of sleep. So in stage three, this is often referred to as delta sleep. So this is when the delta brain waves are happening, and this is our most deepest and restorative, like physically restorative part of the sleep pattern. So this is when our blood pressure drops, our breathing slows right down, our muscles begin to relax. As our muscles begin to relax, the blood supply to muscles actually increases, and this helps with the rejuvenation of muscles and cells. And there's particular hormones released at that time which help with tissue growth and repair, so repair of the skin and major tissues in the body. So that stage three is really important for that physical regrowth and generation. And then stage four is what's often referred to as rapid eye movement sleep, or REM. And that's the stage of sleep when we're actually, our muscles are actually turned off. So, like, for instance, our arms and legs, we can't actually physically move. So if you've ever had the experience of waking up from a dream and not being able to move, you've been in that rapid eye movement sleep. You actually can't physically move. Interestingly enough, although that experience can be quite terrifying if you wake up from a bad dream and feel that, that's actually quite protective, because when we're in that rapid eye movement sleep, our muscles switch off so that we don't actually hurt ourselves, so we don't twist and turn and move around. In that rapid eye movement sleep, that's when a brain is doing the processing of the day. That's when we have our dreams. And that's probably the time when we are processing, making sense of what's happened in the day, flushing out any old chemicals, or clearing out the neurotransmitters in the brain. Also when we're integrating memory as well. So sleep has been linked to memory. So if you have bad sleep, that can often impact your memory, and if you have good sleep, that can help you to be more able to concentrate, more able to recall things, to integrate learning as well from the day. So those are the four stages of sleep.
Well, that's great. I guess those chemicals that you're talking about, I mean, some of those could be bad chemicals that have been caused by stress or anxiety during the day, and sleep can quit the brain of, or the body of those.
Yes, sleep is an important detoxifying process.
Right. Yeah. So I guess the critical thing is getting a good night's sleep, isn't it? And it's something that I've been reading about and recently, because my sleep is very dependent on medication at the moment, which is very frustrating. And before we came into the studio, Declan and Vicky and I were talking about probably the most popular medication for sleep, which is Zopiclone, and highly addictive, I believe. But generally, what are the best ways of getting a good night's sleep, Vicky?
Okay, in general, so there's quite a few things that can help. So I'll just run through a few briefly. One is to keep a regular sleep and wake schedule, so to go to bed at the same time every night, to get up at the same time every morning. Obviously, try not to drink too much caffeine before you go to bed, so maybe about 4 to 5 hours before you go to bed. Cut down on your caffeine intake. Don't drink too much caffeine through the day either. Also alcohol as well, so be careful with alcohol. It's recommended that you don't drink alcohol 3 to 4 hours before you go to bed.
I mean, just on alcohol, it does seem to have quite a dramatic impact. I mean, it can result in us being able to go to sleep quite quickly, but then there's a pattern, isn't there? And I think we wake up often midnight, 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
If you're an older bloke like me, you're probably waken up by the need to go to the to the toilet. But I believe that it's not only that reason that alcohol does wake you up.
It's actually because so alcohol might initially have that effect of relaxing you, but the effect of alcohol actually wears off quite quickly. So if you have a couple of glasses of wine, say, you will feel relaxed, you might go to sleep, but it's often that you will wake up quite quickly, so you won't complete those important sleep cycles.
Right. Does it mean that you won't get back to sleep, or you've just interrupted the...
interrupted it, basically, yeah. So those things, so avoid alcohol, caffeine. Also, avoid eating too many heavy meals before you go to bed. So try and eat earlier in the evening, keep it light. Getting regular exercise throughout the day. So making sure that you're doing some kind of movement or exercise physically so that you can feel physically restful and ready for sleep. However, you have to be careful that you don't exercise do too much vigorous exercise before you go to bed. So if you're going to do a gym session, at 10 o'clock at night, it might not fit, your schedule.
I remember playing squash, and we used to play Masters squash and sometimes start at 9 o'clock at night, and you might be out at Silverdale or Howick or something like that. So, you'd have a very hard game and then probably a few drinks after the squash and not get home until 12:30 at night. And that, I just felt devastated. I never slept well after playing competitive squash. So that's an example.
Definitely, yeah, and that's a really good example. And generally, on that note, you want to be thinking about your sleep routine, so winding down. How do you wind down for those last few hours in the evening before you go to bed? So, for instance, thinking about if you're using laptops or computers, putting them away for an hour or 2 hours before you go to bed. Maybe doing a bit of reading if you want to do some reading, listening to some relaxing music, having a bath. Aromatherapy is also good, so I personally use a little drop of lavender oil on my pillow before I go to sleep. Setting up your bedroom in a way, so it's recommended that if you say doing some work, or maybe work on your laptop or writing notes, whatever, do it in another room and use your bedroom as a place for sleeping and relaxing.
Right.
So just thinking about all those little things can really help too.
What about smoking?
Oh, yeah, but I guess same for smoking and alcohol and caffeine. Wind down your smoking before you go to bed.
I met a woman who'd given up smoking, but she was probably in her late 60s. But she had been a smoker. This was over Easter. And she said often the last thing she did in bed before she went to sleep was to have a cigarette. And if she woke up in the middle of the night, she'd also smoke a cigarette. I mean, extraordinary that people had those sorts of habits. Probably this was 20 years ago. Whether there are people who do that, some I've heard the first thing they do when they wake up is have a cigarette. Let's take a music break, and apologies for some of the technical issues that we had with the tablet and playing music last week, but Declan's been doing a bit of homework
I've put this thing through its paces, so probably a bit like a police dog at training college. The song I've got for you today, what I want to do this year is try and do a few covers. And if you don't know what I mean by cover, it's where somebody else has taken an original song and done their interpretation of it. This song was originally produced in 1971 by John Lennon, and he asked us to imagine a place where things that divide people, religion, possessions, etc., did not exist. It's got a strong political message that's sugar-coated in a beautiful melody. It's my favourite version of this song, and it's got a very gospel theme to it. It's Imagine, and it's by Declan Galbraith.
With Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And of course, Take It From Us is Mental Health Radio on Planet FM, and I'm Sheldon Brown. We're talking today to counselling psychologist Vicky Baird, shedding light on the connection between sleep and our mental health. And when we promoted this, it really is about a bit of a catch-22. Does bad sleep or bad mental health, are they the first thing that come? Is it bad sleep first, or is it bad mental health? And we'll get on to that in talking to Vicky during our long program. But essentially, Vicky, what can happen when we sleep badly?
Okay, well, Sheldon, if we sleep badly, particularly if it happens over a number of nights and over a prolonged period of time, our body can be activated into the stress response. So we become on like hyperarousal, high threat. We have elevated levels of stress hormones in our body. And this can obviously have an impact on different systems in the body. I mean, sleep is crucial, as we know, for the body to fight off disease, to fight off viruses. So if we sleep badly, that can impact our immune system. We're not able to fight off disease and viruses as well. It can also particularly affect, blood pressure, high blood pressure, as I said. So when the body is in a stress response, it hasn't slept for a number of days or weeks or months, our blood pressure is elevated. This contributes to things like elevated risks of heart attacks, strokes, cancer, heart disease, that kind of thing.
Please carry on.
I was just going to say that also an important factor in this is it seems that sleep is hugely important in terms of balancing metabolism. So when we don't get enough sleep or we're not getting the proper sleep, that can have a huge impact on our metabolism. And that can obviously lead to, for instance, type 2 diabetes. And we also know that metabolism affects, also is a risk factor for other chronic diseases.
So our metabolism is really how our body system works.
Yeah, basically right. How it balances, for instance, blood sugar, energy levels, that kind of thing. So those are the main impacts, I guess, of lack of sleep. Also, obviously, emotionally as well. So it has can take a toll on our mental health. We can become more highly stressed about not having sleep. We can become more reactive to things because we're in that kind of fight or flight response. We're easily reactive, so we might be more sensitive or we might get more aggressive. This can obviously not only impact ourselves but our relationships as well.
And our mental health.
You know, we can become more depressed, more anxious.
And so that's when the vicious spiral can sort of occur. We start to get worried about sleep. I mean, can we actually get to the point where poor sleep, we have a dread of going to bed because we virtually predict that our sleep is going to be bad?
Yeah, that's the other catch-22 situation, and that happens quite a lot. So it's a bit of a knife edge because, yes, it is important to have good sleep, but if we're not getting good sleep, it's also important to keep perspective in that and try not to become too preoccupied with it, because the more we become preoccupied with it, the more we get anxious before we go to sleep. That just heightens the effects. So I recall working with a young man once who got particularly preoccupied with his sleep, to the point where that was just taking over his entire life. Like, if he didn't get a 7-hour sleep each night, it would just be catastrophic for him. And he became so fixated on that it actually led to him not being able to have good sleeps each night. So it's quite a fine balance.
And the consequences of that, of not having a decent sort of a sleep, because he was anxious about probably going to bed and anxious about how much sleep he would get, was there an outcome there? I mean, did that...
His mental health deteriorated,
pretty
severely.
Yeah. So are there any other things that can help us get a good night's sleep, like, say, therapy or particularly cognitive behavioural therapy?
Therapy can really help. I mean, CBT for sleep, cognitive behavioural therapy for sleep, is quite widely used and probably one of the most common recommended practices. And CBT, for instance, they might look at that. For instance, they might look at people's ideas around sleep. What are some of the beliefs that are getting in the way of people getting a good night's sleep? They also look at situational things, like what activities we're doing before we go to bed, what might be helpful, what might not. Another important thing to add, for instance, is that if you are having difficulty sleeping, so if you're in bed and you're struggling to get to sleep, it's recommended that if you're in bed for more than 15 minutes and you can't get to sleep or get back to sleep, it's actually better, for instance, to get up, go and do something else until you feel tired, then go back to bed. So if we, for instance, stay in bed when we can't sleep for too long, our brain begins to associate bed with not being able to sleep. So these kind of things can really help, these kind of rituals.
Yeah, and I've certainly been in that situation many years ago, and even taking sleep medication, I found that I was that only was working about 3 hours. So I was waking up probably a little after midnight or 1 o'clock, and then I was a goner for the rest of the night. But a couple of tips that I've picked up. One is to bathe one's feet before going to bed in hot water, and perhaps put a little bit of soap in the baby bath that you might use.
I was just going to add there, I've got one of those little Breville jobbies that you put your feet in and it gives you a massage. The only tip I would give to you is if you're going to use one, make sure you take a towel with you so you're not getting out thinking, oh, my God, where's the towel?
Where are you going to put your wet feet?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Well, the bath mat is probably a good thing to put below...
I've got to watch, because if I do it in the lounge, I sort of think towel first. You know, it's a bit like having a shower, reaching out, and there's no towel there. Right. It's happened.
Okay. Another idea that I've been given recently during my recovery is some deep breathing exercises, just breathing in right to the maximum and breathing out again. Do that for 15 minutes, not only at night time, but when you wake up as well, because that reduces the stress and you're starting your day with a sort of a reduced stress level. So there's a couple of tips anyway. But yeah, anything else that you wanted to say in that regard about good night's sleep?
Yeah, I mean, I think in that note, Sheldon, I mean, you talked about the deep breathing, which reminds me of doing mindfulness practice. I mean, we haven't mentioned that specifically so far, but a regular mindfulness practice before you go to sleep, such as a breathing or a body scan practice. I know the adults that come along to my mindfulness groups, quite often people come because of difficulty with sleeping. And quite often what I notice in that population is they come back from week to week and they say things like the body scan, for instance, really helped them to get to sleep at night. Mm. So having a body scan meditation handy by your bed, you know, switching it on your phone and then just lying and doing a 10-minute body scan or a breathing exercise can be really useful.
So that could be an app on your phone, and listen. Yeah, and I've discovered an app where it suggests that if you're doing this in bed, that you should lie down with your arms beside you and your hands upwards. I normally do that particular exercise on a comfortable chair before I go to sleep, or go to bed. But yes, those apps I think are got great potential for reducing anxiety and stress. Yeah, well, let's take another music break. We've got Declan Curran with us again today as our technician. What have you got, Declan?
Well, just before that, I was going to say that before I go to bed, I tend to plan what I'm going to do for the next day and put anything down on paper so that my mind can go to bed with nothing in there. There's usually nothing in there anyway, but yeah. Anyway, today I have a track from a guy called Connor Maynard. He's only 25 years old, but he's done pretty well for himself. He's British. He's a singer-songwriter. He's a record producer. He's a YouTuber. He's an actor. And he's from Brighton, UK. So here's Connor Maynard with Don't Let Me Down on 104.6 Planet FM.
Crashing, hit a wall right now. I need a miracle. Hurry up now, I need a miracle. Stranded, reaching out. I call your name, but you're not around. I call your name, but you're not around. I need you, I need you, I need you right now. Yeah, I need you right now. So don't let me, don't let me, don't let me down. I think I'm losing my mind now. It's in my head, darling. I hope that you'll be here when I need you the most.
so. So don't let me, don't let me, don't let me down. Don't let me down. Thought you were on my side, but now there's nobody on my side. No, I need you, I need you, I need you right now. Yeah, I need you right now. So don't let me, don't let me, don't let me down. I think I'm losing my mind now. It's in my head, darling. I hope that you'll be here when I need you the most. So, so don't let me, don't let me, don't let me down.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I guess that tune called Don't Let Me Down, some people might think, well, when they're about to go to sleep, well, sleep, don't let me down, because I think sleep, when we are vulnerable to mental health issues, can become an incredibly sensitive issue. And not only sensitive, it can become a bit of a dread. It can, of course, when you're on medication, be perhaps the only time that you get relief from the pain of one's mental health. But unfortunately, that relief comes at the expense of having to take some serious medication in order to get that relief. But we promoted our show about the link between trouble sleeping and mental health, if you like. What comes first? It's a chicken and egg dilemma. What's the link between trouble sleeping and depression, particularly, Vicky?
Sheldon. So It's very common for people presenting with depression to also have trouble sleeping. So it's estimated anywhere between 65 to 90% of adults with clinical depression do have significant sleeping troubles or even a sleeping disorder. And also it's very common also in anxiety. As well, so many adults with anxiety, probably over 50% of people with anxiety, do report having sleep disturbances and sleep disorders.
It's sleep apnea is mentioned here, and that was an issue which contributed to my depression, because I just sleep apnea is when you actually stop breathing and you wake up with some degree of anxiety and shock, but often I didn't realise what had happened. And, you know, this was only detected really by accident. And as a result, I have a small sort of, looks like a rugby player's mouth guard, which is very convenient to put in one's mouth. It's not a big machine or anything like that. And I'm sure that that has contributed dramatically to better quality sleep and to less depression up until the last couple of months anyway. I still use that, and I'm sure it's having a beneficial effect. But anyone with sleep apnea, and in fact there was somebody in a respite home who had serious sleep apnea, and I would have thought that somebody needed to, you know, address that in terms of his sleep quality and also his mental health issues. I did dodge past an issue that we were going to talk about and ask you if it's true that doctors have described more than 70, that's 70, different types of sleep disorders.
Yeah, Sheldon, it's true. We're having disorders for everything these days. Particularly with the DSM, and we also have...
DSM being the
Diagnostical and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. But not only that, we also have the International Classification of Sleep Disorders, which is technically called the ICSD-3.
I see. So we can check that out on Google.
Yeah, you can check that out in Google if you're interested in your sleep disorders. What's worthy to note? So, yeah, I mean, that figure of over 70, the estimate between 60 and 80 disorders, what's important to note is we're often talking about slight differences. So we're talking about one main overarching type of disorder and then lots of different subdivisions of that. What might be interesting or useful to know is the International Classification of Sleep Disorders Manual. They divide sleep disorders into six main types. So just to briefly run through those, the first type and the most common is types of insomnia. So that's trouble falling asleep or waking up in the night or waking up early in the morning and not getting back to sleep. They then talk about hypersomnias.
Insomnias, yeah.
Hyperinsomnias, which are basically excessive sleepiness. So, for instance, people who like longer sleep, people who want to sleep for longer periods of time, narcolepsy, which is falling asleep during the day at different points in the day. And then they have sleep-related breathing disorders, which you mentioned, Sheldon. The main one in that category is sleep apnea,
right.
When people suddenly stop breathing when they're sleeping. The fourth category is what they refer to as circadian rhythm sleep-wake disorders. So circadian rhythm is our internal body clock. So for some people, that internal body clock seems to be out of kilter. For instance, people who struggle to sleep until the early hours of the morning. Maybe, like, I had a friend that would go to sleep at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and sleep all morning. So that kind of thing, that amazingly they even have here, jet lag disorder.
Oh, yeah. But that last one that you talked about where people can't get to sleep until 4 in the morning, I mean, that would be a type of jet lag impact, wouldn't it? Often people that I have been hosting through Airbnb say that they're waking up at 3 or 4 in the morning and just can't get back to sleep as a result of a long flight down to New Zealand.
Yeah, it quite amazes me that even the term jet lag disorder is an actual term, you know, for something that seems like quite an actual thing. You know, if you go anywhere, your circadian rhythm is going to be out of kilter. But I'm guessing that if it's out of kilter for a few days, that's okay. But then obviously I can have a serious impact if it's out of kilter for weeks or months on end. The fifth category they talk about is parasomnias, which are things like night terrors. So some people wake up terrified, screaming in the middle of the night but can't recall the dream or what happened. That's a type of parasomnia. An interesting one I came across was called exploding head syndrome.
Exploding head syndrome?
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I'd never heard of that before, so that was my learning for today.
Right.
And just to explain that for the curious people out there, that is when you experience a sound like a bomb going off, a sudden loud sound in your head as you're drifting off to sleep, so you'll suddenly wake up. And supposedly this is a thing that happens. I've never personally had it myself, but but there we go. So if that happens to you, you know what it is. You can also get sleep-related hallucinations as well. So that's another type of parasomnia. So it's quite common to imagine that we hear things or see things as we're drifting off to sleep. And the final main category, if you like, or a big group of disorder is called sleep movement disorders. So that's like teeth grinding comes into that. So that's quite a common one, sleep-related teeth grinding. People grinding.
Can you, expanding on that there, because of my Sjogren's, which is the autoimmune thing, I've got a mouth guard like you've got, and that's supposedly to stop the teeth grinding or the biting of the gum. So, that's an interesting interesting area.
And that's quite a common one, actually. That's quite common. And people can get it, like, in periods of their life where they're quite stressed. It can also be an impact of drug or alcohol use, which can increase the teeth grinding. That can be quite severe. If it's just a few times and it goes away, it's fine, but if it's ongoing, it can cause quite severe damage. So you have to, it's good to get that one checked out if you do.
And that's restless leg syndrome and also cramps. I've had personal experience with cramps, and they can be very interrupting in terms of sleep, where people have to get up and stretch and in quite distinct pain.
I'm just wondering too, you might have mentioned it and I might not have heard, sometimes you're asleep and all of a sudden you wake up like someone's just put heart paddles on you and you're sort of bump.
Oh, yes, that is, what do they call that? I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. That's called hypnagogic jerk. So it's a type of, sudden jerking movement, and it's very common. So that happens again when we're just in that kind of state of falling, we're about to fall asleep and we'll suddenly get woken. It's almost like some people experience a sense of falling suddenly, or just their whole body jerking. It's kind of unclear what exactly causes that, but some of the reading that I did out there, they reckon it's a kind of discharge of electric energy in the body. So when our neurons and chemicals are going around our body, it might suddenly have a sudden discharge, which would explain that sudden movement or that jerk.
What would you recommend, Vicky, and when something as dramatic as that happens? You did say that if you can't get to sleep, it's often a good idea to go and do something else become tired so that you've got a better chance of getting a good night's sleep. I would imagine that one's heart rate would be racing, and it's certainly with sleep apnea before I got this mouth guard, I would wake up in some degree of discomfort and heart racing and not really understanding what had happened. And clearly I'd stop breathing and, then the system comes back and gets you back again.
Well, I mean, it's always good. I mean, you mentioned that word, understanding. It's always good if there's something that's happening, if you're having an experience, whatever it may be, when you're sleeping and it's causing you anxiety, is to go and get checked out, go to your GP, maybe go and see a psychologist or talk it over with someone and try to find out, what is this? Is this a common thing? Is it something to be concerned about? For instance, sudden jerking movement, that can freak a lot of people out. But that's not severe unless it's happening often all the time, in which case you do recommend that you should go and get it checked out.
I tend to get that if I'm reading for too long and I'm starting to, if I think to myself, I bet I'm going to doze off, and then all of a sudden I either go to drop the book or something and I go vomp and I jump and awake in my chair, so... That could be
By dropping the book, you've fallen asleep,
usually as I'm aware I'm dropping the book, I suddenly come to again. So I'm sitting there nodding away. It's really annoying too. I have to sometimes get up and walk around while I'm reading.
Well, let's take another music break with a choice from Declan here today.
Indeed. Well, I've got another one I've going to play you a mix here. This is Pat Benatar. And she turned 65, believe it or not, on January the 10th. And between 1979 and 1988, she had 17 top 100 hits. Here's We Belong, Pat Benatar, 104.6, Planet FM.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm Take It From Us host Sheldon Brown with Declan Curran, and we're talking today to counselling psychologist Vicky Baird about the power of sleep and the connection between bad sleep and bad mental health and what comes first. But let's, before we try and shed more light on that Catch-22 issue, anxiety, we've talked a little bit about depression, Vicky, but anxiety and sleep concerns, do they frequently present together?
Yeah, for sure. So the stats that we've got here is it's often more than 50% of adults with generalised anxiety disorder also have sweep issues as well. And also, just speaking from my own private practice work, I would say it's probably much higher than 50% that I observe. So anxiety is quite a common one where there's often sweeping issues or sweeping disorders. For instance, in the other anxiety disorders, for instance, post-traumatic stress disorder is often trouble sweeping, panic disorder, and obsessive compulsive disorder. Now that's an interesting one, because in obsessive compulsive disorder, sweep is often one of the things that people can fixate on. As I mentioned before, I had a client and that became part of his OCD, was his sweeping. Right. So that was a very difficult pattern to try and unpack.
I would venture to say that anyone with a serious mental health disorder would begin to fixate on sleep. Other than those people who seem to experience depression and sleep all the time. And that's one of the things that fascinates me, that when I get depressed, I guess I'm very agitated, I'm very anxious, and I have difficulty sleeping at all. But there are some people who seem to sleep for very long periods of time, and I'm quite envious of those, because I rather feel that they're getting all the benefits of sleep and they're going to recover much more quickly. I don't know whether that's the case.
Often not the case. I think, Sheldon, what I've observed in that kind of population is, although people sleep all the time, they often constantly feel exhausted. They wake up not having felt like they've slept. And also, I mean, that sweeping thing is interesting because it's a form of withdrawing from the world, of avoiding the problems, of shutting down, you know, that thing of when you have those days when you just want to pull a blanket over you and hide from everything, and that's often the function or the mechanism in that population, where people are sweeping so much that they're actually just so overwhelmed and wanting just to shut everything out. So,
and they're able to sleep for long periods of time, but not getting the benefit that some of us would think they would be getting.
Right.
So we've been leading up to this chicken and egg situation. What is known as the sort of catch-22 dilemma in terms of sleep and mental health?
So it's just coming back to that thing of often mental health issues and sleep issues go hand in hand. Which one comes first? It's a complex question. And it depends on the individual as well. I mean, we know there's so many factors that affect and influence mental health, and sleep is one of them. But at the same time, there's so many factors that affect and influence the way that we sleep. For instance, time of life, age, personal differences, levels of stress, that kind of thing. So basically, that chicken and egg thing is, it's a complex relationship between sleep and mental health, and it's dynamic, and it's not one or the other, it's both working together, really. And I know in my work as a psychologist, when I'm dealing with those issues, I'm going to be asking a lot of questions to try and really understand and unpack all the context around someone's situation and what's actually going on, and what's the function of the sweep and the sweep issue. You know, what's the function? Is it an avoidance of something else? Is it a coping mechanism? Is it just elevated levels of stress hormone, elevated levels of anxiety? So it's really important, and I think if you're having these issues, that's why it's important, or can be really helpful, to go and talk to a professional that can help you understand what's going on, you know, to actually get a really deep understanding of what's happening.
And a professional would be a psychologist like yourself?
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Come to me.
Very good. All right, well, we hope our listeners have gained some insights about the connection between bad sleep and bad mental health. It is a catch-22, a chicken and egg dilemma, and, you know, does our mental health deteriorate leading to poor sleep, or does poor sleep cause us mental health issues? I'd suggest that the two go hand in hand, and as our mental health deteriorates, probably our sleep deteriorates just the same. Well, let's go to our community notices.
Take it from us, community notice board.
And we've got something about stress strategies, which could be important for getting better sleep. Learn a number of ways to redefine stress and discover ways to de-stress lives for a more resilient body and mind. This is on Thursday, April the 5th, from 6 till 8 p.m. at Glenfield Community Centre. That's at 411 Glenfield Road in Glenfield. The cost is $10. Door sales only, so you can't actually pay online, but you can register to attend this at the Glenfield Community Centre with Michelle at wellhealthyu.nz. So that's Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, at wellhealthyu, all one word, .nz.
I might try and get along to that. Because it's only up the road from me, so I can jump the scooter and be gone.
Oh, well, that's brilliant. And last week and this week, we're promoting the wellbeing support groups. It's the second term for these wellbeing support groups, run by the New Hearts and Minds, which used to be Rayburn House. They've got new groups in Rodney, West Harbour, Waitakere and North Shore. Some wonderful subjects, overcoming anxiety, your personality, your strengths and your vocation. There are some special managing stress and distress for Mandarin speakers. Good Vibrations Music Therapy, which was one that appealed to me, which is every Wednesday in May from the 2nd of May to the 20th, where you can get involved in singing, percussion, songwriting and listening to music, and no musical ability is necessary. So get on to the Hearts and Minds website, which is hearts and minds, all one word, .org.nz. So there's some really valuable well-being support groups being run by Hearts and Minds, and we hope to have them in the studio to talk about their new branding and some of the wonderful work they're doing in the community. We've got one more community notice here. Changing Minds has this major project called Rākau Rōra, where they are looking for people to apply to be participants to take part in training during May and June 2018. It's an opportunity to create a meaningful difference for other people who are going through difficult times. So you can apply by going, or if you want more information, go to changingminds.org.nz / Rākau Rōra, which is Rākau Rōra. This is a big project, a Like Minds project, and we've spoken to Tammy Allen about this Rākau Rōra. It's going to, let's see here, it says mental distress is common experience and is more than the labels of depression or anxiety. It includes people's experiences of feeling isolated, lonely, being overwhelmed by stress and feeling unable to cope. So if you can make a meaningful difference for those sorts of people, this is your opportunity. So that's been taken from us. We're going to our...
I was just going to say, whether we wanted to give any contact details, but...
For Rākau Rōra or for Vicky, you've got a website, a email address, haven't you, Vicky?
I do, yep. It's vicky.baird@outlook.com. So that's vikki.baird, B-A-I-R-D, @outlook.com. But you can also find me on Talking Works website in the West Auckland Counselling section.
Excellent. Thank you, Vicky.